All right. Good evening, everyone. Go around and say hello to starting with Karen and John, Shoketsu, Jinryu, Jeff, Marv, Warren, Bob, Gathel, Franklin, Mark, Coral, and Carson, Sam, Dana, Drew, and Ruth Ann. If I had a better memory, I could have greeted each of the pets that I know are in the background and many people's. Many people's squares. Oh, and Yeshe Tsoki just appeared. Hello. All right. Let's see. In terms of announcements, let's see. We have a new book we're starting next week. Norman Fisher's The World Could Be Otherwise. So that is, you can find that in the newsletter, and there's Gathel's got it, and Bob's got it, and it's also on the website. You can go and find Tuesday Study, and we'll be reading essentially half a chapter a week, because the chapters are a little long, and there's plenty to discuss in each one. So looking forward to that, and... can't think of anything else. Anybody else have any announcements? All right. Let's see. So we have one more discussion on this book, How to Cook Your Life from the Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment by Uchiyama Roshi. Oops. Let me get my better microphone on. All right, how's that? Everybody hear me? Okay. Okay. So this chapter is called Throwing Your Life into the Abode of the Buddha. And it starts with an interesting, it's kind of a provocative chapter. So I'm hoping that we do a lot of discussion tonight. I really want to know what you all think of what Uchiyama Roshi is saying in this chapter. So he starts with this story of how somebody asked him, what do you do for fun? And he says, And essentially, you know, he's a full-time monk and priest. And so he spends, you know, at least 1 month, 1 week out of the month, perhaps two, in session, which is, you know, dawn to dusk silence and meditation. The rest of the time, you know, he's teaching, working, and being available for his monks. And so he's totally absorbed in these activities. And he admits that he has three small shots of whiskey before bed while reading something a little lighter material. And he explains, like, he's doing this. He does this so that his feet stay warm, so that he can sleep better. So it's not even like he's, like, you know, drinking until he gets tipsy or anything. It's just, it's pretty utilitarian. But he says, I guess that's my fun. He said, I do not live my life to have fun. The way I experience the meaning and value of my life is by throwing all my passion for living into everything I do. So then he goes on to this particularly provocative statement. It says, normally we waste our whole lives playing with toys. And he goes on to explain what he means by that, what he means by toys. The first toy people clamor for when they are born is their mother's breast. Then it is on to teddy bears and electric trains, and as we get older, bicycles, watches, cameras, and finally jewelry, clothes, and the opposite sex. Then he goes on to say, scholarly study and research can be just another toy. Getting rich in business, competing with the Joneses, fame, trying to become best in your field, trying to make sure your children outcompete other children and go to the best schools, and busying, in their old age, people busy themselves with collecting antiques, attending various tea ceremony functions, or visiting temples. In other words, with the same mentality as children, people while away their whole lives over some toy or another. I even suppose you could add to this list of toys most of the super zealous religions that have become popular since World War II. So I wanted to start right off with a breakout in which I ask you to honestly respond to this very provocative portrayal of typical human behavior. Normally, we waste our whole lives playing with toys. So to what extent do you think this is true? Do you agree? And if so, in what ways? But also, do you disagree? If so, in what ways? I think this is a provocative kind of statement that it's fruitful to wrestle with whether we agree or not, and just go there. So if you think this is like, what? I don't understand what he's talking about. That's not true. Just go ahead and say that. So let's see. Do we want... I guess we'll just go into the rooms that we had before. So please accept the invite, and we'll just do this for, you know, 10 minutes or so. And then I would love to hear what people say when they come back. So have a little bit of a report back and a discussion. Any particular thoughts that you shared or you heard in your discussions that you wanted to share in the larger group?
Well, I just wanted to finish a point I was trying to make because you called us back mid-sentence. But as we were discussing in the group I was in, I was also reading through this, and he gets to the point toward the bottom of page 93, that last paragraph there. I think it's easy to get hung up on the word toy. So I'll say that word quietly. But he says, when you consider things carefully, it seems that we have a tendency to fill our whole lives with toys, trying to make sense out of our lives only in relation to these toys. And for me, that meant, and we touched on it some in our group discussion, we spend our whole lives trying to figure out, maybe it's our purpose or that which makes us joyful or happy, but it's always in relation to everything that's out here. And I think that's the point he's trying to make. As opposed to what's really in here. I didn't know what to think when you first read the sentence and whether or not I agreed with it. I'm starting to agree with it.
Other thoughts?
One of the things that came up as us in junior year's group is substituting distractions for toys. How we focus on different things that, or get distracted by, things that distract us from doing the internal work, focusing on the practice, focusing on the, you know, what's meaningful. We tend to get absorbed and distracted easily by, as Junior was saying, what's out here.
I feel like his language is it's kind of deliberately provocative, which, you know, there's a I don't tend to use that kind of language. I tend to state things in very down to earth, honest, complex, there's two sides to everything kind of way, but there's a place for teachers that state something clearly enough that you just have to kind of, you have to kind of wrestle with it, you know, like, what does that mean? I have a response to it. It's speaking to one particular truth, right? Anything that stated that, like people were saying in my group, it's a little one-dimensional, but what, you know, that doesn't mean that it's not saying something valuable.
I thought back to my youth and a book that was very popular in the 70s, Zen by Michael Persig, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Mm-hmm. It's about many things. Very popular book, but at one level it was really about the care and quality of attention you bring to your life. It didn't separate out. It didn't say, oh, this is it. No, you're sort of recasting things as, you know, not throwaways. It was really looking at a kind of a life of attention. Maybe toy is a way of saying this is something that you don't take, things you don't take proper respect for or care for. They're just always ends to a means. Mm-hmm. Because I think Persig was really saying that our relationship and our material things that we need for life, that we, you know, respect and enjoy and give proper attention to and care for, rather than just throw away in a utilitarian, non-respectful, non-appreciative sense. Perhaps that's where you can find the middle ground. I think Uchiyama is sort of trolling us a bit with that term. Put it in modern parlance.
Yeah, and if we... let's assume for a moment that he's not saying that we should never feel lighthearted, that we should never actually play, that we should never, you know, that let's just say he's not saying that. He's not saying that we should never enjoy anything. I mean, the whole book is about, in a way, is about enjoyment and passion, and but of a different sort. So if he's not saying that, And there is a way that toy can be sound judgmental and dismissive of the stuff of our lives. I mean, he wasn't just talking about material stuff, right? He was talking about relationships and your career and your children and all of this. So, like, you know, what is he saying when he's saying we waste our time? And what in some way we waste our time. So if we don't use the term playing with toys, you know, what in a way is he saying? How is it that we waste our time?
Perhaps in a Dharma sense, he's talking about, you know, that coming and going and setting objectives, and rather than sitting down and being in the moment. You know, my wife's a palliative care specialist, and she says she's a hopeless doctor. So she practices working with people who have ultimately, in terms of final objectives, little, sometimes can be with little hope. She can't offer a cure. So maybe that's a way of looking at it from the Dharma sense, that the not coming and going, not seeking another teacher, not looking to advance, just appreciating what is at the moment.
And who doesn't, at some level, think with some trepidation or fear about a circumstance we may face in the future, whether that is due to old age, disease, or death, or through changing conditions, personal or societal, of a point where we would no longer have our pleasures. We would no longer have our comforts and our home and our friends and our family members and our hobbies and our, physical health, so we can go for a walk and all of these, these pleasures, which there's nothing inherently wrong with, but we really rely on for our happiness. I do. I can have this background aspiration to like be centered in something deeper, but I love, having dinner with my husband, and I love cuddling my dog, and I love the birds in my garden, and I love all of this stuff, but this is all like if my happiness is dependent on that continued source of pleasure or fun or relaxation or something, there is a certain kind of, there's an insecurity to it, right? This is dukkha. This is, we know things are impermanent. And unless we are tapped into something deeper, unless our source of strength and joy comes from something deeper, then we're always just a little anxious. I mean, of course we're miserable when we lose the stuff, but even when we haven't lost the stuff, we're always have a little bit of anxiety about it. So to move on, he says on page 94, in Buddhism, finding the meaning of life never means to search for it among toys. So let's say among conditional external things. A life which relies on conditional external things for its value means nothing more than that one is led around by those things, thus losing sight of living with true purpose or intensity. To live the Buddha Dharma is to live without the necessity of having to be constantly entertained by conditional external things. Having a passion for life means only to pour all our life forces into your true self with a capital S. Life in terms of everything we encounter, the people with whom we come into contact, all the material things we use and handle every day, that is our life and our true self. And it is into this that we throw our life force. So, in another short breakout, here's the question for you. So he talks about living our life with passion. How did he say it exactly? Having a passion for life means only to pour all our life forces into your true self with a capital S. So the question is, think about today and what you did today. Did you live today with passion? And if yes, or at certain times you did, how did that passion manifest? And if no, or somewhere in between, which I think most of us would be, right? Not quite the passion that we might aspire to be living with. If at times we weren't living with that kind of passion, what do you think your living your day would have looked like if you had had that passion? So if you didn't feel that passion, what do you think it would have looked like if you had had that passion? So I will, recreate and invite. All right, are we any clearer on what living with passion means? Anybody who hasn't spoken yet?
I feel like I know exactly what it means. I feel like it's just throwing yourself into the moment and not leaving any part of yourself behind. And I guess that's maybe a short answer is the best answer. I would just say, throwing yourself wholeheartedly into the moment.
So, it's a lot easier to feel passionate, and by passionate, I mean, there's a lot of, that word can mean a lot of things, including like sexual lust and all that. So probably not that. But a strong, one of the definitions I found was a strong fondness, enthusiasm, or desire for something. And then the synonyms, some of the synonyms that jumped out at me were dedication, devotion, excitement, feeling, fervor, intensity, joy, spirit, enthusiasm, fascination. So for me, almost, I think enthusiasm. Although I want to throw this out there as an object for discussion. Whatever this is that we're pointing toward, this passion, this enthusiasm, this wholeheartedness, it's easier to feel when we're doing something we enjoy. It's easier to feel when we're not in pain or facing trials and tribulations. But the kind of enthusiasm that I think Uchiyama's getting at can be employed no matter what's going on. So even when you feel like complete shit, somehow you can do it with passion. So what do people think about that?
To me, the word passion maybe isn't the best, because it's hard to get away from associating it with sort of emotional intensity, which the whole idea of sort of being present in everyday mundane life, you know, is kind of one of the undercurrents of this book, I guess. And I mean, that would be really emotionally unsustainable to be sort of at this, you know, having emotional peaks all the time. So I don't think that's what he means. I think that passion just doesn't work for me there. But to your question about unpleasant experiences, and then, you know, for like further on that side of the spectrum to like actually painful experiences. I guess there is a way where you can maintain awareness of an unpleasant experience, just letting it unfold in its own space, and somehow, you know, once in a while, mindful awareness lets you smile at it and just almost enjoy the unpleasantness of it. So,
I think that he's like the weird. The word toy, he's using passion the same way. It doesn't quite fit, and it makes you kind of start wiggling it around, trying to figure out where it does fit. What does he mean? What does it mean to me? So I think it's his word choice is quite deliberate in that case, like with toy. And sitting here thinking about it, I would define living passionately is putting as much effort into the boring bits as you do with the exciting bits. And as I said today, I was working on spreadsheets. They aren't exciting, but they're part of the job I do, which at times does get exciting. And they're all part of the same. And the same when I was doing archaeology, I would sit days on end in a microscope looking at little flakes of rock. Boring. But, you know, it's all part of the whole, and you put the passion, you put as much effort into that boring bit. But for one thing, putting an effort into that, which is this build-up and the setup for the exciting bit, makes the exciting bit, makes the energized portion more enjoyable and work better.
Well, you're making me think of the other parts of the Tenzo Kyokan, which he doesn't mention in this chapter, but where you're supposed to bring this same attitude, you know, whether you're making a rich cream soup or you're just, you know, working with little greens, that you're supposed to bring this same kind of attitude no matter what task you're approaching. So,
Domio, could I add to what Gathel's said? And I think it's also got, to me, overtures of that you meet life full on as it comes, but with your own voice and within your own light, from within your own light, so that Gathel's work colleague might be just as focused on the microscope next to him, but that work colleague will have a different way of being focused on the microscope to Gathel. We're not all just focus and doing the boring bits. We all do it with our own flavor. So I think it's sort of to appreciate your own flavor as well.
Yeah, I too struggled with the kind of the emotional overload of the word passion. So I think you read a few synonyms, and the one I like the most is wholehearted. And, so I'm going to stick with that.
Yeah.
What Gothel and Mark were just talking about reminded me a long, long time ago when I was taking genetics and I had to do some experiments with Drosophila, fruit flies. And I was very fond of these fruit flies. So I would bring them home so I knew that they would be well cared for. And when I had to put... I can't remember what I was using, if it was chloroform or what, to knock them out so I could look them under the microscope. I would always say this little prayer to them. I said, I'm so sorry. I won't do too much. It's just enough so that you'll be still. Please forgive me. And I'd put them under the microscope. Some of them I haven't had names for, and then I'd put them back in the tubes. But, I mean, in a way, I guess you could say I was passionate about caring for these fruit flies that I was observing how when they just did whatever they did naturally, whatever mutations came up to record it genetically. Now, if you had to sit me in front of a computer, though, and just do data entry all day, my body's not going to like it at all. It's just, I mean, I will wholeheartedly do it in the sense that I will show up and do the job really well. But trust me, I'm not taking that stuff home with me. Not like those fruit flies.
I think, you know, this is very challenging practice. It's not something that is easy to come by, even if you've come by it in your life and it's made a strong impression, it's still something you have to work at. But when we drop all expectations, when we drop our mental map of the world, when we perceive things from the absolute perspective, it's just an absolute miracle that we're alive. It's a miracle that we can feel pain. It's a miracle that our breath keeps going. It's a miracle that the gravity keeps us on the planet. It's a miracle we have an atmosphere to breathe. It's so, and not in a kind of a narrative story kind of way. It just in a very, very real way that is the case. And we can, it's an aspect of the truth that's always there. It's just sometimes, you know, we're too caught up in our own misery and experience, you know, and that's not to blame us. It's not, I don't think, you know, the point of practice is not to feel inadequate or guilty or anything. It's just, I think it's an optimistic, hopeful thing to consider that no matter what, no matter how, what we face, no matter how much pain we might be in, no matter how shitty things are, that we cannot, and what he's pointing at is like, when we do this practice of wholeheartedness and simply, you know, allowing things to unfold, but what he's really pointing at is like, it's not just that, it's actually beautiful. It's actually luminous. It's actually amazing. So the passion, I mean, it's not an overwrought kind of emotional high kind of passion, but it's a wonder. And I feel like this is what one of my favorite Chan masters, Hong Zhi, does a really good job of writing about. So here's one of his verses. He says, "Vast and far-reaching without boundary, secluded and pure, manifesting light, this spirit is without obstruction. Its brightness does not shine out, but can be called empty and inherently radiant. Its brightness, inherently purifying, transcends causal conditions beyond subject and object. Subtle but preserved, illumined and vast. Also, it cannot be spoken of as being or non-being, or discussed with images or calculations. Right in here, the central pivot turns, the gateway opens. You accord and respond without laboring, and accomplish without hindrance. Everywhere turn around freely, not following conditions, not falling into classifications. Facing everything, let go and attain stability. Stay with that, just as that. Stay with this, just as this. that and this are mixed together with no discriminations as to their places. So it is said that the earth lifts up the mountain without knowing the mountain's stark steepness. A rock contains jade without knowing the jade's flawlessness. This is how to truly practice, how practice must be enacted. Yeah.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. From the moment you said, it's a miracle we're alive, I don't know what happened, but I am just like tingling with ecstatic delight. And it's just, I'm just like, yes, yes, this is why I'm here. Yes, everything about, I mean, I'm not kidding. And I'm saying everywhere, I'm literally my cells are tingling with delight. Yes, thank you for this miracle. I'm so ecstatic, I can hardly stand.
Hope to have that effect on more people.
And I'd love to know where that quote was that you just read from Hong Zhu.
It's from the Cultivating the Empty Field.
That's so. Okay.
When you were saying, when you started saying what Yeshe Seoki was referring to, what came to mind was like, this is why I think it's important, like, just to have a mundane, just to have a schedule where you practice regardless of whether you're feeling good about it or not, because, you know, your, like, our irritation or hunger or pain, that's nature happening in the form of our irritation or hunger or pain. And that's how we're with it, you know, in the form of Zazen. So just having the sort of everyday mundane thing that we commit to doing, it kind of takes it out of our hands so that we don't not do it when, you know, we have that feeling of, no, I'm not feeling good. I'll push Zazen away or whatever your practice is. So. But yeah, thank you. Thanks for that quote.
And that passion is like, what is it? Because, and it's something we have to answer for each for ourselves, right? Because what does it, it's not just a positive emotional state. You know, that's one of the things I heard as people were checking in. It's like, well, I mean, you know, sometimes things go great and sometimes they don't, you know? So it's not like we're trying to maintain some kind of, you know, blissful emotional state. So what does it mean? What does it mean to be just, I don't, fully appreciative or wholehearted, even no matter how things are going? I guess for me, it always feels like, you know, Zazen, of course, again, is a microcosm of this. And when I notice, you know, that I was sitting there tonight, it's a little overfull, kind of drowsy and dull. And, you know, and there's part of me that goes, that, you know, that's not how I should be feeling. I should be sitting Zazen or something like that. And then it's like, this is what's happening. This is my reality right now, is feeling kind of stuffed and dull. Like, there's a way that I can be wholeheartedly stuffed and dull. All right, well, we offer the merit of this study together to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Or good afternoon.
Ha 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 ha.